Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From EMG Media, this is The Happening. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. On July 13th, 1980, the Holinwell Showgrounds in Nottinghamshire, Great Britain, is alive with the sound of a jazz band jamboree, food stalls and the chatter of nearly 500 children. It's a quintessential English summer day. Until, without warning, the music stops. One child collapses. Then another. And another. Like dominoes, within minutes the field is a scene of quiet devastation as hundreds of children and adults collapse to the grass, clutching their stomachs, gasping for air, and passing out in waves. Voices are heard coming over the loudspeaker.
"Ladies and gentlemen, please do not drink the water."
Warnings shouted in panic and as a precaution.
"Do not eat the food provided."
But there was no obvious predator. No clear cause. The Holinwell incident remains one of the most unsettling medical mysteries of the 20th century. What caused more than 400 children, infants, teenagers and adults to be admitted to hospital that day? Was it a secret pesticide leak from the nearby farms? A freak atmospheric phenomenon? Perhaps high-frequency radio waves? Or maybe something more paranormal? Or, as the official reports eventually claimed, was it just all, quote, in their heads? A massive breakout of collective hysteria? Tonight we're peeling back the layers of a 40-year-old cold case. We'll take a look at the official government report, examine the suppressed theories, and ask the question that still haunts the survivors. How do hundreds of people get sick at the exact same time if nothing was actually there? So, Holinwell. This is a strange one for sure, because it happened at a community showground in the small market town of Kirby and Ashfield, which was midway between the cities of Nottingham and Mansfield in the East Midlands of England. It's an interesting account that appears to still elicit the same kind of confusion and mystery now as it did back then. I managed to get my hands on the official government report into the incident, which was compiled a few months after the incident in 1980. It took me a little while and some persistence and hard work to get hold of the report, but I got it. In fact, it's the only copy in existence, so I have to guard it with my life, so to speak. Although looking at the document, the first thing I notice is that I'm only the seventh person since 1980 who has accessed this document, so I'm guessing it's not exactly hot reading in the halls of Westminster. Irrespective, the data, evidence and information for tonight's episode is taken from the official investigation and report. So, let's start at the very beginning, shall we? Like many regions at the time in the mid and north of England, Kirkby and Ashfield is a town with a rich mining heritage. It was common for each of the mining communities at the time to be centred around a pit, where there was a wealth of families who were involved in the work and operation of the miners' network for that specific pit or colliery. Whilst the head of the household, the father, might typically work underground at the coalface, the children and the families would develop their own interests, and one such popular interest at the time were jazz and brass band performances. These bands would show off their talents and skills at town fetes, carnivals, parades, and other county competitions, competing with other jazz bands from the wider area. Choreographers engaged and drilled in friendly competitions and large show events, where they would strut their latest performances. There were family events with food and drink stalls, carnival games, face painting, and that sort of thing. The day that we are talking about tonight was one of the larger annual events, a cross-county competition with jazz bands from a number of towns across Middle England. Groups came from far afield, arranged by the Forest League of the Juvenile Jazz Bands Association. It was a bright Sunday, July 13th, 1980. Xanadu by Olivia Newton-John and the Electric Light Orchestra was the top of the music charts, and The Empire Strikes Back was taking cinemas across the UK by storm. Now, under that summer sky that day, the annual event at the Hollinwell Showgrounds made national news. But not for the prestige of batons and stunning performances of the many in attendance, but because many instead were overcome with an affliction. A strange affliction that resulted in hundreds of children, teenagers, adults, and even infants collapsing, seemingly without any known cause. Further reports from the time also indicated that animals were also affected. On the day itself, there was a large number of ailments being reported, issues stretching from fainting, nausea, sore throats, trembling, weakness, numbness of limbs, and with many reports of large blisters forming on the skin of those affected. Some individuals reported sudden metallic tastes in their mouths. The St. John's ambulance crew were on site that day, as is common practice for large events, but the paramedics were quickly and rapidly overwhelmed. A policewoman who was on duty at the event stated, quote,
"It was like a battlefield with bodies everywhere. Officials there were completely overwhelmed. It happened all of a sudden, out of the blue."
Bob Rickard of the 40 and Times magazine, a UK-based publication that reports on strange events and unusual phenomena, kept a very detailed account and clippings of the evolving story at the time. The information that he collated formed the structure of a book that he published alongside Dr. Bob Bartholomew, titled The British Cases of the History of Mass Hysteria and Social Panics. It's a catchy title. Now, prior to that publication, in September 2010, a feature was also published in the 40 and Times issue, number 266, titled The Hollinwell Incident. This was also replicated online. However, over time, that article has now disappeared. But of course, with the use of the Wayback Machine, it's possible to view this article in full. Bob's feature remains one of the best and most concise series of accounts of the incident. I would encourage you to go and have a look at it if you can. I recommend you read this alongside the information from the official report. The reason for this will become apparent as we progress further into this episode. I'll quote some of Bob's feature and research here, though, coupled with some further interviews and comments from witnesses, and some more details that have emerged since. Anyway, in addition to these sources, I've been able to read through and examine the details that were officially reported at the time through the government report, which also includes information as to what the officials were going through as a process, and also their understanding of the environment that the children had faced on that day. Much of this document was never released to the press, so it has never been reported on. It gives great insight and detail about the challenges the professionals faced at the time. The sights, the confusion, the chaos. It evidences what was seen by bystanders, by law enforcement and other governmental officials who arrived on the scene shortly after the incident began, which is strange within itself. It's noted that many of the children had been at the location from very early in the morning. Buses had been arriving from across the county since around 8 a.m. that day. An eyewitness and event photographer that day was 69-year-old Neil Lancashire. He was manning an information stall first thing that morning, where he was also promoting his photography business, which he has since run for more than 50 years. He noticed that the only water that was available was from an exterior tap. Groups, he recalled, were being drilled in readiness for their performances later that day. There was also a gymkhana being held at the same event on the opposite side of the field. Then, at around 10:30 a.m, the children started to collapse. One Terry Bingham is possibly the most press-quoted individual who was present, and he was very vocal about his observations on that day. Terry was the secretary to the Zingari's band, from Clay Cross in Derbyshire.
We were all ready for the display when one or two children collapsed, then went a few more and a few more. We started to call the events off, but others also fell as they came out of the main arena. Then spectators started dropping too.
This was Terry Bingham in 1980. Bingham also remembers that they, the children, quote,
fell down like nine pins.
But Bingham continued,
we didn't know what was happening. Some kids were catching their friends as they fell, and others were falling down into themselves. No one could understand what was happening.
Petula Merriman, aged 14 at the time, said to the Sunday Times, quote,
we were on a field in full uniform for an inspection. I never had to stand to attention for that long before. It was really hot. As we were marched off, I tried to grab hold of my drum, but it fell to the floor. All I could see were my friends collapsing all around me.
Another of the afflicted, named Kerry Elliott, aged 10, stated the following, quote,
I went all week and had sharp, stabbing pains in my stomach, and then I fainted. Everyone was falling down around me, and some were crying. My stomach was tight and hurting. I felt better when I came round in hospital.
Kerry's 7-year-old brother Stephen was similarly affected. Enid Holmes, who was the secretary of the Creswell Cragleaders, noted that she had seen some bands were reporting having water-filled blisters on their arms, legs and backs. Two babies, just a few weeks old each, also developed these blisters on their skin and quickly became very ill. Margaret Palethorpe, a 37-year-old mother of five children, three of whom were amongst the collapsed that day, felt pins and needles in her tongue and lips, and she said that it came on randomly and very quickly. Quote, then I collapsed and lost the use of one arm, she said. Linda Elliott, mother of Kerry and Stephen, felt strange as she comforted her children on the way to hospital, where she too then collapsed. Quote, my arms and legs were like sponges. It felt like there was cramp in my stomach. That's all I remembered until I came around, Elliot is quoted as telling the press on the day. Miss Edna Wells, chairman of the Ashfield Imperials, one of the jazz bands performing that day, said that she tried to keep the children talking. Quote, I was trying to help them, but then I became ill too, and suddenly my world went dark as I lost consciousness. Neil Lancashire confirmed that there was an announcement not to drink the water. Susan Rook, a lead jazz band drummer then aged 13 of Crabtree Farm in Lupton, stated, quote, my arms and legs felt as if they had no bones in them, and I had a really bad headache. I began to feel really dizzy. Then I passed out. They were each transported by dozens of ambulances to four hospitals in the Nottinghamshire area, where 255 children were examined and nine were detained overnight. Quote, there was a woman carrying a small child in her arms. There was no mobile phones at the time, and the nearest phone box wasn't even close by. These are the recent comments of Dawn Carwood. Further, she said, quote, I was only 12 years old and everyone was passing out. I only remember my parents panicking when I got home, as they didn't drive, so we got driven to the hospital by the band bus. In addition, Lisa Richardson also said recently, quote, me and my sister were in the Kirby Tardiers jazz band. I remember girls collapsing all around me. I was very young. They were just fainting all around me. It really scared me. Lisa also remarked how she didn't return to performing in events after that day. Neil Lancashire said that there was another call that was broadcast out over the loudspeaker not to eat the ice cream from the vendors. Then even more fainted. Then another call went out. Don't touch the grass on the field, it said. The event organisers feared that it had been sprayed by fertiliser and all of this was being triggered by some sort of dangerous chemical on the grass. The announcements about the food and water, the ice cream, the grass, and the fertiliser was all pure guesswork, however. No one had any idea what was happening or what was causing this. Dozens more fell down. There were now hundreds of bodies strewn across the field, and widespread panic amongst all those present.
This field behind at Hollinwell in Nottinghamshire is where it all went wrong yesterday. About 500 youngsters had gathered for the Forest League of Junior Jazz Bands competition. As you see on the board, it says the family show. That's exactly what it was. Whole families suddenly slumped to the ground.
I feel a lot better than what I did yesterday, but my legs are still a bit shaky.
You don't think it might just have been something that went around because people saw that other people were being ill?
No, I don't think so.
You're quite sure you couldn't have been imagining it?
Yeah, I weren't imagining it. Nothing at all. We thought at first it was just like fainting, but then of course so many went down that it couldn't possibly be.
Once emergency services were involved and had begun arriving, they immediately coordinated all those affected and transported them to four local hospitals. 259 children were admitted to the four hospitals. Nine were held overnight for further observation, and there was an additional 15 adults and two babies under the age of 1 year old. Additionally, horses and dogs were also affected. Some had to be put down following the incident. So look, what happened? Strangely, even now in 2026, it's very much still up for debate. Now, 40 years later, the mystery still endures. But is it a mystery? We actually have some answers. Is the mystery still there, or is it, in fact, something quite more mundane? What were the findings of the official government investigation? Was the local water contaminated? Was there food poisoning? Was it a high-frequency communication tower or government covert testing of technology? Were UFOs involved? Or perhaps, was there gas leaking from an underground mine? All of these theories emerged in the subsequent days, weeks, and months after the incident, and all were thoroughly investigated as possible explanations. By the next day, word had gotten around and the national press were all over the story. So let's take a quick look at what the press were saying at the time regarding the Hollinwell incident. Well, here are some of the headlines. The Daily Mail said,
"The poison cloud riddle of 305 sick children."
This is what The Sun had to say,
"Poison cloud chaos, 288 children."
And the Daily Mirror,
"Carnival hunt for chaos clues."
And finally, the Daily Star,
"Panic, knocks out gala kids."
Then there were multiple headlines over the following few days which suggested that there may have been a cover-up being implemented around the incident. Check out these headlines. First up is the Daily Mirror on the 16th of July.
"A carnival cover-up fury."
And this headline from The Guardian on the 17th of July.
"Children's collapse, a cover-up claim."
Finally, the Daily Star also reported on the 17th of July.
"Huge row over carnival chaos cover-up."
Strangely, the suggestion of some kind of high-level cover-up is still an odd and somewhat hushed conversation within the community. People who I reached out to don't want to talk about that specifically. They will discuss the incident, but they are reluctant to discuss or have a personal conversation about any potential cover-up, especially a recorded conversation. Terry Bingham stated on record to the Western Mail newspaper that when he opened his medical release letter issued to him by the hospital following his admittance, he commented that the letter gave the reason why he was admitted, according to the medical staff at the hospital, was due to the inhalation of organic poison. Bingham was told to pass the letter on to his GP, or personal doctor. As the official line of inquiry continued, the farmer who owned the adjacent fields to the showgrounds confirmed that his fields had not been sprayed with any pesticides or chemicals in over a decade. He was an entirely organic farmer, he said. The surrounding locations of the Nottinghamshire Golf Club, the Forestry Commission, and the other farms provided information that none of their locations had indeed been in use, nor has been sprayed or treated chemically at any time recently. Fun fact: official records show that the wind direction that day was actually blowing in the opposite direction of the surrounding farms in comparison to the showgrounds. So thus, even if they had sprayed chemicals, they would not have been blown towards the event grounds. Anyway, A local plastics factory was also highlighted as a possible cause due to a fire near to the location. And thus the media frenzy began speculating, which in turn put additional pressure on officials looking for an answer themselves. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's go back to the official government report, shall we? It's really interesting to see what they were actually suggesting behind the scenes, what their lines of inquiry were, and how serious those suggestions were taken. Let's look at the numbers. There are lots of figures being thrown around online and in the media of the day as to the actual number of people involved in the incident. So on Monday the 14th of July, the names, addresses and patients recorded were released to the public. The Environmental Health Authority were informed that 255 patients were recorded as attending 4 hospitals across the Nottinghamshire county. The hospitals estimated that they had actually seen over 400 people, but because of the pressure of all those attending, they were not all recorded. Blood and urine samples were taken from each of the admitted patients. The samples were then provided to the EHA, who visited 224 of those families in the subsequent days. 193 of those 255 were children. 37 were male, 187 were female. The majority of those females were aged between 11 and 15. To quote from pages 5 and 6 of the official report, quote, "Policemen and firemen were also admitted to hospital with these complaints also." It's also in the government report that a number of horses and dogs were afflicted and had to be put down following the incident. Another policewoman did go to hospital, but with a separate condition, though it was included in the report for balance. The aforementioned 2 babies were also admitted to hospitals. Both babies had been prematurely born, it is recorded in the official report, although it is not clear what significance that had on the incident or the baby's reaction at large. Now, on July the 20th, the Sunday Times reported that 5 horses had become ill and one had to be, quote, destroyed. In a statement by Chief Inspector Ogden, this was confirmed, and also that several dogs were affected by the same measures. This was also confirmed by the police authority. A police statement that went out on the 16th of July and another on the 23rd of July both highlighted that theories of food poisoning were being investigated, though it was later established that food poisoning could not have been the cause of the incident. The symptoms and the time involved did not indicate food poisoning, but the EHA also tested samples of all food on sale at the site, as well as samples of food that individuals had brought with them privately to the event for personal consumption. The aforementioned fire at that plastics factory that I spoke about, well, it was in Bulwell, and it was actually 10 miles to the southeast of the location. This occurred on the Saturday before the event, and fire services found no supporting evidence for this fire as being linked in any way to the Hollinwell incident. Furthermore, the wind was blowing in the wrong direction on that day. Water samples were taken for chemical and bacteriological testing by the EHA. Samples were found to be negative of contaminants, while surrounding farms had confirmed that they used no pesticides or harmful chemicals on their land, and this was tested for anyway to ensure thoroughness. The Health and Safety Executive and Agricultural Inspectorate found no evidence of spraying in the immediate area, contamination of land by chemical additives, or fungicides. Samples from soil, vegetation, and chemical tests on the blood and urine of the patients from the hospitals all proved negative for chemical contaminants and unexpected additions. An anonymous phone call to the police on the morning of the incident, however, stated that the police should look into high-frequency radio wave towers. So, wanting to leave no stone unturned, they did just that. In fact, the police actually found a high-frequency radio wave tower just 100 yards away from the showgrounds. The tower was used by the East Midlands Gas Authority and the RAC, or Royal Automobile Club, the British version of AAA for our American listeners. The power levels from this tower were found, however, to be so low and below the maximum permitted level that even when standing within a few feet of the aerial, it would have had no effect on an average person. Additionally, portable toilets were a frequent complaint, much as they are today. There was roughly 800 to 900 people at the event, and only 8 portable toilets. So as you can imagine, there might have been a rather interesting smell. Although the event had only been going on for around 90 minutes when the incident occurred, so it is unlikely the portable toilets would have seen an overwhelming level of use in that time. Worth adding here, however, is that some of the people who were present that day commented that there was a smell of bleach in the air, and, well, the portable toilets were treated with large quantities of bleach, and it is thought that the toilets were the source of the smell that was lingering in the air. I'll add this sentence direct from the official report here. Quote, "Numerous other theories have been advanced by the public and the press, from low-frequency noise transmission to extraterrestrial visitation or a strange paranormal mystery," unquote. Aliens have been considered to be without substance for the most part, as they usually are. But this came after the Daily Telegraph on the 15th of July reported that police were following a line of inquiry that an unidentified flying object was witnessed by several people landing in an adjacent field. The landing was never verified with hard evidence, although how could it have been? It is something to note that when this claim was derived, little did they know, just 7 years and 4 months later in 1987, the Thunderbolt incident would occur in the very same location. Look that up if you aren't familiar with it. It's quite the coincidence. Now, there were suggestions of methane gas seepage from a nearby borehole test site. But this was found to be a non-entity as the source had been fully capped and not in use at the time. Toxic waste was also put forward as a suggestion, but there was no source or location in the immediate, medium, or even far range to support this. Exhaust fumes from cars was put forward as a potential theory, but the report states as a conclusion that there was no environmental health hazard precedent or any reason or possibility to substantiate this suggestion. So there really was a systematic investigation of what could have caused this kind of occurrence. The government investigation really did look into every single possible cause for the strange event. As an aside, I let you decide why government agents could descend on the location so quickly after the incident. A 15-point conclusion was published on the 22nd of August 1980 by the Environmental Health and Control Authority. They met with the Department of Environment in London, and no further lines of inquiry were outlined or considered. They concluded that no environmental health hazard was present that day, nor caused the incident. A very full and frank discussion then took place with the media and the television reporters and the public. At the time, regional councillors, chairman of the Environmental Health and Control Committee, directors of the Environmental Health, 2 senior police officers, a community doctor, the chief medical officer, chief biochemist, and registrar for the accident and emergency medicine at Queen's Medical Centre, the agricultural safety inspector, and the health and safety executive all met. So this was a significant investigation, and it certainly wasn't brushed aside. Which goes to show how serious and strange the incident at Hollinwell was taken to be. But what was the conclusion? Well, all of the answers should be in the official report. But strangely, well, there were no answers. The authorities could not find a reasonable explanation for what caused the happening at Hollinwell. Referencing back to Neil Lancashire, the photographer at the location that day in July 1980, well, he was very clear on his perspective. He felt that exhaustion, dehydration, and mental toil had caused the happening. He states that too many of the children and onlookers complained about the heat and the long periods of standing. But for clarity, no one had been on site for more than 2 hours when the incident happened. What are your thoughts on Lancashire's theory? The children were wearing tight uniforms, Some children wore heavy sashes complete with medals showing success from previous events. The organiser has stated that they expected a proportion of the children to faint at such events. The long periods of standing, the heat, the excitement, the type of clothes, etc. But around 400 individuals, including babies who weren't standing, adults who weren't involved in the events or wearing the jazz band clothing, and also animals at the event? It must also be remembered, of course, that the children did not collapse together. It was five or six at a time, over the course of roughly 90 minutes in total. So, was it simply tiredness? Were the children all just exhausted? Following the conclusion of the government investigation, and it essentially proving or finding nothing, parents and the public demanded answers. What happened to the 400 children that day? Well, two spokesmen for the British Psychological Society, Dr. John Nicholson and Dr. William Thomas, stated in the Daily Telegraph that it is their belief that the incident was caused by, quote, mass hysteria. At the press briefing, Chief Inspector Ogden concluded that a large number of children had been parading, standing to attention, excited for the event and under pressure to perform. He could understand and accept the psychological explanation of mass hysteria. After the first two children had toppled over, the condition spread on sight and reaction alone. Appendix 5 in the official report includes information and documents provided by Dr. John Slay. Dr. Slay provides reports of previous occurrences of mass hysteria, such as an infection hysteria at a comprehensive school where 172 children were taken to hospital in Hazelrigg in Newcastle upon Tyne, which followed much the same pattern as Hollinwell. In this incident, the 172 children were taken to hospital with quick onset nausea, stomach cramps, dizziness and headaches. 82% of those were aged between 8 to 14. Original investigations for that incident looked at food poisoning, chemical intoxication, environmental factors, and temperature. But the overall answer provided for that incident was simply mass hysteria. Dr. John Slay also provided details of a further account from 1965, where an investigation at a comprehensive school took place where a child felt sick. She became very ill. She was assisted by friends, and then by proxy, other people then started to experience and exhibit the same symptoms and condition. They then attended a school assembly where another fell faint, then another, and another. Several of the children were sent outside to get fresh air, and when the head of year went to check on the respective girls, they found that they also became ill with the same symptoms. The number of people who were feeling faint gradually increased. Quickly, children were shivering, collapsing, complaining of nausea and dizziness, and the number of affected rose to more than 30. As the girls were calmed by school staff and told, "It's okay, it's over," and were encouraged to go back inside, the symptoms began to dissipate, particularly after they were separated. Dr. Slay also provided four other cases where mass hysteria in a vein similar to the Hollinwell incident had occurred. This is likely where the suggestion of a cover-up comes from. You see, the media had hyped up so many theories and suggested so many sinister causes for the incident that they then slowed it all down abruptly with a simple and dismissive explanation of mass hysteria. And the public felt, well, short-changed. They wanted a more definitive answer. Something must have happened to these children, they thought. Regional Member of Parliament Dennis Skinner was one of three MPs who were calling for a government inquiry. He stated that the mass hysteria verdict was an insult to the intelligence of the public and yet another cover-up by the establishment. Arthur Peacock of the Mansfield Ecology Party is quoted as saying that this incident had led to a public scandal. He said that everyone in the Ashfield Council can see it as ludicrous to put the blame on mass hysteria. Something was being brushed under the carpet here, he continued. But for the most part, the incident essentially went away. It disappeared into the ether for around 23 years. That was until a BBC documentary titled, quote, Inside Out was released. In the documentary, several individuals who were present on the day of the incident spoke out. Individuals who hadn't been quoted or included in the original government investigation. Terry Bingham, was part of the documentary. He said he still thought it was insecticides, even though no trace was found. Here is a news report following the publication of the government inquiry.
But in fact, I have seen the hospital notes of one child whose father took the notes away with him, and that says under diagnosis quite clearly inhalation of organic poison, and it's signed by the doctor.
You say mass hysteria is a symptom of a nerve gas. Could it be that mass hysteria was the right diagnosis, but it goes deeper than that?
Yes, in a very mild form. There's a letter in the New Scientist on Friday pointing out that in a very mild form, the first symptoms are in fact confusion and panic, and therefore a diagnosis of hysteria is not exclusive of a poisoning by an insecticide.
What are your conclusions then?
I'm saying that I think that raises a whole range of questions which haven't been adequately answered, both about this particular case and about the use of some of the things we put on our land in general. I don't think people realise how lethal they are.
Steve Mitchell, who was a paramedic who responded to the emergency call that day, commented in the BBC documentary that there were lots of young people who were distressed. Their eyes were sore and they had severe breathing difficulties. There was a smell in the air. Perhaps the children in the field were dispersing a chemical into the air as they walked, marched and performed on the field, he speculated. I'm sure something was inhaled by the children. Also in the documentary, a local resident who wanted to remain anonymous and went only by Hazel T stated that, quote, "On the same weekend as the Hollinwell incident, I collapsed in my uncle's garden in Kirkby, which was close to the showgrounds. I couldn't breathe, and then they had to get an emergency doctor to come out to see me. Whatever happened to me left me asthmatic to this very day. And for a few years afterwards, my breathing was really bad." Kerry Louise Randall, who attended the Hollinwell Gala as a member of a jazz band, stated that, quote, "If it was mass hysteria, why did it affect the babies, the adults and some animals as well as the children? Surely they would not have been susceptible to this. Especially the babies." She has a point. The official inquiry ruled that mass hysteria was likely the cause, with the symptoms experienced by the children demonstrating the characteristics of such an outbreak. People present at the event, however, were adamant that the symptoms were real and not the result of a psychological event or due to hysteria. They also expressed frustration at never having received a satisfactory explanation. As of February 2026, the local council in Kirkby has no plans to revisit the incident or reopen an inquiry. And this is where we are left. What happened that day in Hollywell? What caused the incident? As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your theories and your ideas. Post them in the comments or drop me a message. For those of you who want to support our show and get access to extra episodes, consider joining us over at www.patreon.com/deadsouls. Good night, everyone.